introduce our honorary pace car driver for today's United Rentals Work United 500. Lynn St. James hails from the great state of Ohio, but has been a Phoenix resident for probably about 20 years now. But just world-renowned, world-class driver on multiple disciplines, class winner at the 12 hours of Daytona, 12 hours of Sebring, 24 hours of Daytona, 12 hours of Sebring, I believe 24 hours of Nürburgring as well. Of course, we know about the Indianapolis 500, where, you know, first female rookie of the year in the Indy 500, and an impressive resume all across the board, and you're joining us today. So, Lynn, how cool is it for you to be the honorary pace car driver for today's NASCAR Cup Series race?
Well, it's amazing, but what's really is amazing, I thought that's what I was doing, was driving the pace car, and he said, you're in the press room. I haven't been sitting on this side in a press room at a racetrack in a long time. So, sorry, I'm taking this in. This is not just like old school. So thank you for, you know, for giving me the opportunity, inviting me to drive the pace car. I got to get my training in with Kip this morning and found out that speed control is going to be able to really pace the speed. I said I don't even get credit for actually driving the right speed the whole time. But anyway, technology's all part of our life. But it is an honor. It's an honor to see this sport celebrate Women's History Month the way they are now. And as we were talking before, you know, to me, this sport's always been family. It's always been open. Once you show up at the racetrack, you know, and you have a role, and whether it's a fan actually, or whether you're working in this industry or sport, whether you're a driver or crew member, you're part of the family, and you just got to show up, do your job, and do it well, because slackers are not really allowed in our sport. And it's been that way for me for over 40 years. So, but now to see the sport celebrate Women's History Month the way they are has just been huge. You know, just really gives me goosebumps, to be honest, to be able to see the sport embrace women the way they are. And, you know, it's just really great. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to open the floor up for questions. We have a question. We'll get a wireless mic to you. We're going to start here with Lee Spencer.
Can you talk about what an honor it is getting inducted into the West Coast Stock Car Hall of Fame?
Well, I've never really felt Hall of Fame material, to be honest. You know, I always feel Hall of Fames are for the Kevin Harvicks of the world who've won championships. And, you know, I've had some wins, fortunately, on my resume. But so these things come out of a huge surprise to me, and so it is a huge honor. So, you know, I feel a little more comfortable since I do live in Phoenix. At least I live on the West Coast now, and I've certainly raced, you know, on the western part of the country, Riverside, Sonoma, Laguna. So I somehow feel that's because of the identity of it, that is part of the criteria. But it's just mind-boggling to a certain degree, and particularly to be amongst the greats, you know, the greats, some of them of the past, but certainly the greats of the now. And so it's big. It's big.
Go next to Reed, then to Wolfgang.
Reed Spencer with the NASCAR Wire Service. Given your association with Roush Racing at Sebring, did you ever have a temptation to compete in a stock car?
Well, that's actually a long answer probably, and I'll try to make it short. One of the reasons I took a Thunderbird to Talladega was to try to convince Ford Motor Company that I could drive a stock car, because I could see that's where they were going. You know, they were starting to wane a little bit from sports car racing. And so I thought, I can drive stock car. I've driven those Mustangs. And, you know, and Bill Elliott and I had gotten to know each other winning at Daytona, and, you know, kind of get to know people at a 24-hour race. And long story short, Ford contracted the Elliots to build that Thunderbird and to take that Thunderbird to Talladega, and we set 21 national international speed records. Bill taught me about the car and kind of taught me about how to get around Talladega. And I remember when he rode around with me, it was like, well, tell me where to go. And he goes, I'm going to tell you where not to go. And so it was all great. But you know what? I didn't like driving that car. I mean, it's like a truck. I mean, I would turn the wheel, nothing would happen, and I'd have to crank the wheel more. And I mean, I know the cars maybe are a lot better now, but I didn't really have fun. I mean, I was glad we got it done. 3 weeks later, I got to drive an Indy car for the first time. Dick Simon gave me the opportunity, and to be honest, I fell in love. I mean, that car and I just were connected. So I didn't feel that, but I did want to go, and I did want to do it. But it, you know, sometimes that I work with young drivers, I say, pay attention to what you connect with, you know, what you really feel. Don't get caught up where I got to go here, I got to go there, I got to do this. Let people tell you that. Really know where you're connected with the car and with the people, and that's where you should go. Follow that. So.
Next to Wolfgang.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Wolfgang. Yes, thank you for the Christmas card.
Like always, I have two questions. Through Matt's media release, I was informed you have some involvement with ACCUS, ACCUS, which I think represents American motorsport to the FIA in Paris. So question number one, do you can also play some influence to the FIA in Paris? And the second question, when you raced at the 24-hour Nürburgring, how did you prepare? Was there already simulator technology available?
Well, I'll answer the second one first. It was 1979, you know, no simulators. It was my first time out of the country. And so how we prepared was we took rental cars and for the 3 or 4 days before the weekend and kept doing laps. And B.F. Goodrich was smart enough to hire, I wish I could remember the gentleman's name, this German driver who had one arm who taught us. That's it. It was, yes. And he, with no speaking English in one arm, he's like talking to us and, you know, hand signals and everything. That's how we learned the track. And so it was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. The first answer is yes, I'm now a member of ACCUS. It's now my second year. I was caught off guard with that, but very honored. I'm one of what they call the independent member board members. Most of the board members represent the six sanctioning bodies. ACCUS stands for Automobile Competition Committee of the United States. A lot of people don't know that. And we are the ASN, the representative on FIA. But George Silberman is the president of ACCUS, and all we do is we discuss the issues of what's happening here, and we certainly, you know, stay what is happening with the FIA. But to say that we have influence over the FIA, that, I mean, that's, we oversee and help support motorsports in the United States. And the FIA does what they do, and there's a good communication between the two. But from my standpoint, racing in this country is very different than what racing in Europe is. And so, you know, we can learn from each other, and you look for best practices, and you want as much commonality where you can cross the ponds. But it's still different here, and we just need to do the best we can do here, you know, and make our sport grow. I don't think we have a great influence on what happens with the FIA. Oh, we can. Yeah, we can. But George takes care of that, the president, yeah.
Next question is going to come from Cole.
Thank you. Cole Cusimano with the Arizona Republic.
There you are. Sorry.
You mentioned working with a lot of young drivers, and I'm curious, in honor of Women's History Month, if any female drivers currently have made a big impression on you coming up through the
race. Oh, yeah. I mean, Kaylee Bryson is on everybody's, you know, radar right now. Taylor Ferns, who I actually worked with years ago when she came to my driver development program. The names, they aren't going to all just roll off my tongue, but you know, if you guys are, you know, paying any attention on social media or in race results, I mean, one of the things I really wish we had a better system was how to find race results. You know, you have to dig through all these different race passes and all these different to find out how people, and I'm still trying to figure out heat races and all of that, but you know, to have, and I think Ava, and I don't know how to pronounce her name, just won a USAC feature just this weekend, I think. It's amazing and exciting to see how many women are actually, you know, I mean, Tony Creighton Tony Bredinger I watched out here on Friday night. We had, five women running ARCA at Daytona. I mean, Mindy Chick. I mean, there's talent out there, you know, and so you don't have to dig deep like sometimes I had to decades ago.
And final question for you. Do you have a favorite for today?
Do I have a favorite for today?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, no, I really don't. I mean, I'm still learning the car numbers with what drivers, to be honest. Wait a minute. Yeah, it would have to be Kevin Harvick. I mean, you know, I've known him a long time and his story, and there's a certain sentimentality about somebody running their last season. I kind of can feel that pain. And so I guess it would be Kevin. Thank you for asking. Now I'll know who it is I'm going to cheer for today.
We're going to go to Dan and then to Dustin.
Dan Hubbard with Motor Racing Network. And it's kind of in touch with his first question. What was some of the challenges you had to face as a woman in racing as opposed to what the women are facing now? Maybe you just give one example of maybe a challenge that they don't have that you had to contend with.
Well, I think, I hope, actually, you know, I think having Ford as a sponsor, being a Ford factory driver, enhanced my credibility instantly. I mean, you know, that it's just, you know, Ford isn't going to sign somebody just for the fact that they showed up and they're a female driver, even though that was the perception for probably the first couple of years. I think today, if you've got any race results at all, you're looked at as a race car driver and not just as a woman race car driver. I think that, you know, so much of my decades were, I was only there because I was the woman, you know, and representing that gender and they could check the box or something. So I don't think that is the case anymore. I mean, I think the credibility is instantly acknowledged if you've got the race results to show it. And you know, I had a hard time finding getting the race results necessarily. And at the same time, you know, that I had to ignore the fact that that was the understanding is why I was there. You know, is that I was the woman, and I said I'm going to prove it. It's because I'm going to win races, and Watkins Glen helped that a lot.
Dustin Long, NBC Sports. Lynn, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Women in Motorsports North America launched about a year ago, if I'm not April 20th.
April, yeah.
So I'm curious what you feel like you've been able to accomplish in essentially the first year and what more you're looking and as you've gotten through the first year essentially expanding or what more you're wanting this organization to become now as it begins to take its baby steps and current moving forward.
Baby steps are behind us, man. It's happening. What happened was the floodgates opened. I mean, I am actually quite amazed. We launched it, like you said, a year ago, April. We knew there was something there, that there was a reason to do this, again for me, you know, because I'd done it years ago, but now it was about all careers, all disciplines, and not just about drivers, so I had to grow out of my all about the drivers. But I think it's just that the floodgates have opened. I mean, the attendance and the support we got at Charlotte for our Women with Drive Summit, we had over 300 women and men, and the fact that this is not just about women supporting women, we want to support each other, but it's about men also supporting us and finding allies. And so that just totally solidify the need, and if we can fill a need, I don't want to just do something for the sake of doing it. We have to fill a need, and we are filling it. We are still figuring out what we can, you know, what our future is. I mean, in fact, we literally Tuesday have our first executive committee in-person meeting to help do WIMDA. It's now WIMDA to kind of keep it, because Women in Motorsports North America, a lot of words, is that we're doing WIMDA 2.0 to exactly define how we can really continue to not just grow, but to contribute to make a difference in the sport. So we're learning as we go, but what's the difference is the floodgates have opened. People are coming to us. Sponsors are coming to us. Teams are coming to us. Crews are coming, and people are coming to us. We've made jobs happen, not made them happen, but jobs have happened as a result of what we've been doing. So it's a lot of work, but it's time. The time is right.
And I know you talked about the number of female drivers in the ARCA race at Daytona, and I know the organization covers all forms of motor racing, but since we're at a NASCAR race, so can I ask more of a NASCAR-specific question, is certainly there have been some females in the top levels, but it's not been as consistent, and there's been a gap. And is there a sense of, I know you say talk about let the drivers feel what's comfortable to them, but is there a sense that there is a pathway or how to create a more open pathway for a female driver or to have an have that opportunity to move up in the stock car ranks?
Well, I think the sport, whether you're a guy or a gal, it's very difficult because the ladder is not really clear. It gets really, really clustered. And so, we are talking a lot with leadership at NASCAR, as well as the other sanctioning bodies, and everybody's on the same page that we need to have a better defined ladder to get to the top of whatever category, you know, that is. I've always sort of referenced NHRA that has a pretty good system with their junior dragster program. But so we are working with them, and I know that, again, they're talking to us because they are trying to figure out it as well. So, and to be honest, the pathway is as difficult for a guy as it is for a female. The gap is always the hardest because as you go up that ladder, the cost escalates significantly. And so having the experience and establishing your brand and your awareness out there, I mean, we're working very... Oh, Cindy, help me. We are working very actively on a program that I can't talk about right now because we're going to be announcing it, I think, on March 21st. So more to follow on that subject. And I know, but I got to be careful. So that is desperately in my desire to try to help not solve it, but to help contribute to that so that it is... You know, follow the female. I mean, in racing, you follow who wins. You follow who, some forms the top three, other forms maybe the top five, for sure the top 10. And if you don't fit any of those criteria except maybe crash, they don't know who you are and from week to week. And so we've got to get women drivers in that mindset, race where you can, that's why these gals in USAC are doing so well, because they're actually at a level that they can really be competitive, and they are finishing in the top three or the top five or the top 10 or winning. And that's where you need to be before you start getting busy about going up higher. And so so we got to figure out how to make that all happen too in other categories.
Speaking of Crash, we're going to finish off here with Crash Gladys here in the back of the room.
Hey, girl.
Hey, Lynn. Love the reference there. First of all, you just hashtagged something, and I want you to take that. Hashtag follow the female. That can go viral with your initiative and everything you're doing. So I just wanted to throw that out there. You mentioned your summit in Charlotte last year. You got something coming up here at Phoenix Raceway. Everybody in this room, we all want to bridge that gap that Dustin was talking about. How can we help you with what you're doing here at the end of the NASCAR season here at Phoenix Raceway? How can all of us help you bridge that gap?
God, you're good. November 7th and 8th, we will have our Women with Drive Summit 3. It's right here, right after the championship race. So you're local, so I'm expecting you to stay. But, you know, stay over for a couple of days. Come to our summit. You know, interview the people that are there. It isn't just the driver. The drivers are our stars. I mean, our drivers, I still believe, are the communicators, the ambassadors. But, you know, Shannon, who we just met, and what's Shannon's last name? Shannon Cooper, you know, who is the head of marketing for 11, I still want to say X, sorry. You know, there's so many interesting stories of the successful, and we want to celebrate the successful people and the successful women in the sport. And so that's what we'll be doing at the summit. So come to the summit, you know, and stay and be a part of it. You know, we will have panel discussions, and we'll be talking about the media and how to improve branding and how to improve communication. I mean, it's all about making the sport better, and that's all we're trying to do. So thank you. Everybody write down November 7th, 8th on their calendars and be here. Join us.
Great. Well,